The Church of God the Eternal presents What is the Natural Body? This is the number 26 tape in this series, and it will be given by Mr. Raymond Cole.
In the others, as I went through it, I showed you their proper function. I showed you what they were by nature, the human nature with which we were born, the natural eye, the natural ear, how the eye sees what it wants to, the ear hears what it wants to, and so on. But then we have a definite spiritual obligation with regard to the eye and the ear. So we could show the contrast. The member that I'm going to cover today cannot be treated in exactly the same way. I've got to show it in contrast. Because this member affects every other member of the body. But it is an imperative member of the body if we are to do the will of God. So as we have seen, every natural member of this physical body must be brought under control. That is, we have a natural eye, and when we're converted, the natural eye is still there. We still see with it, but we have to learn to control it. So every physical member I have talked about up to this point, the eye, the ear, taste buds, and so on, are all subject to control, either from the flesh orientation, the natural proclivities of our natures, or subject to another force and another power. So these very members then must be trained and given direction. However, there is one carnal member which is totally unacceptable. You cannot find any other member mentioned within the entire body that is totally unacceptable and has to be gotten rid of. But this one does. That member must be totally replaced. It is the natural mind with which we were born. Now, I'm not talking about the brain. I'm talking about the mind. And I don't even know that there is a human being on the face of this earth, including those of us called, and I know we can come much closer than even the greatest scientists walking today, that can differentiate between. But there is a difference. You're born with a brain, but so are horses and cows, but they don't have the same capacity whatsoever. You have been given a mind that can analyze, can think, can plan, compare, execute. A brain cannot do that. I don't find anything too significant in the Bible concerning the brain. I'm not even sure, as a matter of fact, that it's mentioned. I don't have any recall of a single place in all the Bible that the natural brain is even mentioned. But there are a great many references to mind. Now, mind proceeds from the brain. But it's another ingredient altogether. Now, what is so wrong with the natural flesh mind? How can it be replaced? And how can one know which mind he possesses? After all, if you were to ask most people, they're convinced, especially if they call themselves Christian, they're convinced that their mind is that which Christ gave to them. And yet, if so, That's the most divided mind that has ever existed on the face of this earth, because every man says that he has the mind of Christ, and yet they're in conflict with one another. You know, it would have looked very peculiar and very funny in the physical life of Jesus Christ if he had gone around with 4,000 or 40,000 or 400,000 or 4 million or 4 billion conflicting opinions. Now, what would you do if a man came along today and he just had 3 different conflicting opinions? You'd say, well, that man is nuts, wouldn't you? And yet, when we go out around and we talk about Christianity, and people have all these divergent concepts and so on, and everyone thinks that he has the mind of Christ. And we take that as normal and natural. But we'd go like this, for sure, if a man himself came along and just had 3 different concepts that came out of that brain or out of that mind at one and the same time, and they were in conflict with one another. So how in the world can one know which mind he possesses? In fact, just whose mind should so dominate us? You mean you're going to empty that mind out completely and allow some other mind to take over absolutely? Totally. And yet it is required. What if one fails to subdue the natural mind and bring it under complete control? An actual total replacement. What happens? First, I want us to notice that the called must assume a new, different mind. Absolutely imperative. In Philippians 2 and verse 5, it's a good place to begin. We're going to read a number of texts. I have a lot of material to give today just to get half of this done, so we're going to move along. Philippians 2 and verse 5. It said, let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. Now that shows volition. God will not force his will upon those chosen. Satan, however, when he takes over, inflicts his will upon those he dominates. God says it is your responsibility to allow. It is a matter of choice. You must choose it. So we sit then, if called by God, with the awesome monumental responsibility of recognizing what our mind is, coming to abhor and reject it, and to allow the mind of Christ to come in 100% and dominate us. Now, if you listen to people very carefully, you will recognize that for the most part, none of us have even come close to that. I can listen to the comments, and I quickly realize that if the words I'm hearing are proceeding from the mind or from the heart, that they reflect a great deal of the natural mind and the natural heart yet. Well, I'm not about to do so and so. Or after all, you know, I was given a mind and I intend to use my own mind. And similar expressions. You hear them quite frequently. I didn't say now that it should be the mind of another human being who dominates you, but how about a different one? See, we don't want the mind of another human being, no better than ours. But how about the mind of Jesus Christ? Let or allow this mind to be in you. In Romans 12 and verse 2, Romans 12 And noticing verse 2. And be not conformed to this world, but be you transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. We're going to come back to that point a little later. At this point, I want us to get just the earlier part of this. Be not conformed to this world. That is, we are not now mentally oriented, a form of confirmation now, to the way this world, the natural physical world, thinks. But now you are to be renewed, that is, transformed by the renewing of your mind. In 1 Corinthians 2 and verse 12, 1 Corinthians 2 and let's note verse 12. Now we have received not the spirit of the world, but the spirit which is of God. Now here is a contrast. And that spirit, of course, is the essence of this mind. The spirit of God, and it isn't exactly the mind of Christ, but I'm going to call it that just so that we can get the picture. We have received not the spirit of the world. So there is in this world then an order of thought, a motivation, an orientation of natural mind that is in contrast now with another orientation or direction, a mind or the mental capacity of God. It's a spiritual orientation. But we have then, if not the spirit of this world, we have received the spirit which is of God. Now, I know of no place in the Bible that says that I received the eye of God or the feet or the ear. But you better have the mind. It is a promise to those called that they can have the mind of God or of Christ. In 1 Corinthians 2 and verse 16, we read this. For who hath known the mind of the Lord, that he may instruct him? But we have the mind of Christ. We have the mind of Christ. In Ephesians 4 and verse 23, we read this. Ephesians 4 and verse 23. Be renewed in the spirit of your mind. What he has shown in a couple of places here is that there is an enormous conflict, a drag that goes on. If that were not true, why did he twice tell us that we had to be renewed in spirit? Unless there is something that is negatively pulling us down, setting up an enormous conflict. And that if we're not aware of it, conscious of it, will destroy us progressively. All right, second point that I want us to consider. What is wrong with the natural mind? We find now that we must have a different mind, the mind of Christ or the mind of God. But then what's wrong with the physical one? There must be something bad about it. In Romans 8 and verse 7, we read that the carnal mind is enmity against God. The natural mind with which human beings are born are in opposition to God. Well, they're not subject to God at all. They're not subject to the law of God, and neither indeed can be. So the natural minds, then, with which we were born are anti-God, hateful, contemptuous regarding spiritual things. That's why you can't possibly comprehend God's way. That's why you cannot possibly overcome and master the self with a natural mind. It has a natural animosity against things spiritual. It hates it. It wants no part of it. In 1 Corinthians 2 and verse 9, 1 Corinthians 2, and noticing verse 9, it says, as it is written, eye hath not seen, nor ear heard. Now here are the two natural members of the body that affect our ability to read and to comprehend. Eye hath not seen, nor ear heard. Neither has it entered into the heart of man the things which God hath prepared for them that love him. In this case, a kind of a euphemistic expression, meaning the mind. Because the heart gives its emotional dimension. The mind could be as calculating and as severe as it could possibly be. It is the heart that gives emotional dimension to thoughts, concepts, purposes. So eye has not seen, nor ear heard, neither has it entered into the heart of man the things which God hath prepared for them that love him. Then you can't rely on the natural mind because it would never dawn on you. It can't even enter in. Things spiritual, then, could never make an inroad into the natural mind of human beings. In 1 Corinthians 2 and verse 14, speaking of that natural mind once again, the natural man receives not the things of the Spirit of God. Or let's just say the mind of God. The natural man receives not, that is, it will not accept the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness unto him. Then spiritual things make no sense to a natural mind. Absolute foolishness to them. But you can imagine how they view you. No matter how brilliant that mind is, they may tolerate you because they're educated to do that. But they're probably mystified by what makes you tick. They see no relevancy whatsoever. So the natural mind receives not the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness unto him. Neither can he know them. He just can't know. So we can't rely on the natural mind then at all. In Romans 8 and verse 6, remember we're dealing with what this natural mind is. Why can't we trust it? Why can't we use it? Just give it a better direction. Romans 8 and verse 6. For to be carnally minded, that is to have the natural orientation of mind, is death. The end result, then, of our natural orientation mentally is death. Why should we want it? And then finally, Romans 12 and verse 3. Romans 12, and let's note verse 3. For I say through the grace given unto me to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think. One of the major problems with the human mind is its arrogance. Defective, weak, inefficient, lacking. There's nothing really to underscore its conception of itself. Yet by nature is the most arrogant member of the body. It is the mind that gives the direction to people who mince as they walk and they go down the streets with their heads high in the air. It isn't a poker in the back. It's a mind. A mind that doesn't even recognize its inefficiency, its defect, its lack. And every other vile characteristic. The natural mind then has an arrogant spirit. It thinks very highly of itself. It's self-protective. And all of us have at some time lived in that domain. There is no mortal that has not lived there. Any mortal that has not recognized that fact has yet to understand what conversion is all about. All right, thirdly, what are the manifestations of the carnal mind? What are the actual manifestations of this carnal mind? In Luke 12 and verse 29, we'll notice one of the traits and the characteristics of the natural mind. Haughty, arrogant, yes. But yet when it gets right down to the nitty-gritty, to the substance of issues and so on, it lacks confidence, it lacks orientation, it lacks direction, it lacks everything of any positive significance. Luke 12 and verse 29. Seek not you what you shall eat or what you shall drink, neither be you of doubtful mind. One of the characteristics of a human mind is doubt. Lacking in assurance and confidence, orientation or direction. And one of the things to be overcome and mastered is that very weakness. It's an incredible weakness that is incredibly destructive. In Proverbs 29 and verse 11, we read another characteristic. We have talked about it earlier, but let's put it in perspective here now. Proverbs 29, noticing verse 11. A fool uttereth all his mind. I won't take time to show that man, devoid of the Spirit of God, is foolish. But foolish man thinks that things spiritual are foolish. So the foolish point the finger at the foolish. A fool utters all of his mind, which simply means that if we were judicious and careful, and if we had the mind of Christ, we too would not open our mouths. But we would be more like that sheep with closed mouths led to the slaughter. But we open our mouths and we utter everything. And it usually affects us in two different ways. Have you ever talked or been in a group where somebody has all the answers? There isn't a thing you can bring up that individual doesn't know. Incessantly talking. But God said, you know, with regard to our responsibilities in life, it's a whole lot better if we just shut our mouths and go on. Because in much speaking, there wanteth not sin. And then there is a huge element of braggadocio. One of the manifestations of carnality. Romans 8 and verse 5. Romans 8. And let's note verse 5. For they that are after the flesh do mind the things of the flesh. The things of the flesh are well defined in the Bible. And what it says is that we can easily see or comprehend that individual who is oriented to these natural things. The manifestations of the natural mind. So when we see somebody that is involved in any of these natural traits, these traits of the flesh, Galatians 5 gives you a pretty good list. Paul also expanded that list in both Corinthians and Colossians and a few other locations of the traits, the manifestations of the flesh. And so if we see any of those traits, we don't have to ask ourselves the question, well, I wonder, is that man a Christian or not? No. Now, that doesn't mean that he isn't called. I mean, at that particular point, he is not living by the mind of Christ. That's a manifestation of the flesh. And one of the keys, it is emphasized over and over and over, is animosity, contempt, resentment. We see it so much. And when you see it, just recognize it for what it is. It's not of God. It's not of the Spirit. It's of the flesh. And that way leads to death. We're going to see a little later, in contrast, the manifestations of the Spirit. But let me, by contrast, refer to it just momentarily. The Spirit, on the other hand, is a spirit of peace and tranquility. Not agitated. It's not always upset. It has a spiritual orientation. That's the spirit we had better have, because that one is going to give us life. It isn't my big toe that becomes irritated, filled with animosity and resentment. It's my mind. And a human mind can do devastating things to us. You've seen people that can never relax. They pace. They're constantly agitated and troubled, perplexed. Or those who are bewildered and live consistently in doubt, manifestations of the flesh, the natural mind. They that are after the flesh do mind the things of the flesh. They're concerned with those things which are of the flesh. Well defined in God's word. Romans 12 and verse 16. Romans 12 and verse 16. Be of the same mind one toward another. Mind not high things, but condescend to men of low estate. One of the characteristics then of the human mind is selectivity. We're always going to seek our companionships, that is, humanly speaking, on the basis of what we presume to be desired results. Is it a feather in our cap? Is it an augmentation to our the image of self? Do we select our companionships on the basis of ill-conceived ideas, as they say, birds of a kind flock together? A manifestation of the carnal mind? Or do we intelligently, with the mind of Christ, make determinations? It's a very serious thought, and one we all must weigh. So the natural mind, then, is conceited. It's arrogant. Hebrews 12 and verse 3. Hebrews 12. And noticing verse 3. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest you be wearied and faint in your minds. One of the natural traits and characteristics of human minds is not only initial lethargy or apathy or indifference, but it is the tendency in the progress of time or the progression of time to become indifferent and to lose our zest, our purpose, our orientation. We are told to consider Christ, the one from whom we receive our new mind, lest we become weary and faint in our minds. We lose our direction. We lose our purpose, our zest, our driving addiction or ambition. When we see that, we know that that is a manifestation of the flesh mind, the carnal mind. In Ephesians 2 and verse 3, Ephesians 2 and verse 3, wherein in times, among whom also we all had our conversation, that is, our conduct in times past, in the lusts of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind. All of us then, in times past, lived according to the dictates of the natural mind, the flesh implications, orientations. So in a sense then, we live the expectations of the flesh and mind. What are the natural expectations of the mind, of the flesh? We know God defines them, well defined in His Word. If we see those things then, it isn't a matter of judgment, you know, but that has not proceeded from the mind of God. Ephesians 4 and verse 17. This I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that you henceforth walk not as other Gentiles walk in the vanity of their mind. Man, with his natural mind, is arrogant, vain, puffed up, self-protective. They always trust themselves. You know, it reminded me, because I saw it manifested back in 1974 so many times, and that's why you've heard me say what I have so many times about the fact that you can sit and study from here till kingdom come, and you're not going to come to the truth. There's no way out. I heard it, I guess, 1,000 times, if once, during that period of time, where people would say, well, no, I can't trust anybody anymore. I'm going to find out for myself. You know, there is no such way Oh, I know there's some people going to buck and they're going to carry on because they hear me say that. But I can back it up with ample texts. And because of that statement, I have never said, or even in relationship to that statement, let me put it that way. I have never said that you should never read and study. What I'm saying is, if you can read and study from now till kingdom come, and you will never come to the truth. And I'll say it 1,000 times more. For God says that truth will come only when it's given to you. And when it's given to you, it's going to be accepted on the basis of faith. Because it's not a tangible item. And once you have accepted it, you have faith in it. Trust. That's why I have said to you that I would have no hope. I would have no confidence. I couldn't stand before you or sit before you or whatever and say what I do unless I am adhering to the very thing that we taught and believed all those years. That's the only confidence I have. If I start saying, well, you know, I can find out by looking for myself, I'm no different than anybody else. And there are a whole lot better minds than mine that have been looking for a long time, and they never came to it. Never. We will not depart from that original faith. Oh, I know there are various ones that are sitting out there, and apparently they know a whole lot better than they did at Pasadena what was taught. That's unfortunate. I'll have to say like Jesus Christ did in that case, and I said, well, if I agreed with them, I'd be a liar like unto you. I know what they taught. And I don't care who the individual is. It's high time somebody comes to recognize it. Now, they can sit out there and fight all they want to, but I'm warning. And there's going to come a day when they wish with all that's within them they had listened. You have to do the same thing that I do. You think there's any feather in my cap from an intellectual perspective to say, no, it isn't what I come up with. It's got to be this thing right back here that we all accepted. That's no feather to me. What's wrong with the rest of us accepting it? No, we'd rather squabble. We'd rather fight about it. And that is not of God. And I'm saying this leading up to Passover, brethren, because I'll tell you the day is coming. And I want us prepared. You're not going to be able to point a finger at me. Because despite all the consequences, I have sat here and told you over and over and over. For if that is not it, then why don't we close up our books and go home? I certainly don't know where it is. No, let's quit the struggling and the fighting, manifestations of the carnality that with which we were born, and finally have peace. The mind of Christ. There is an arrogance of mind, and it's a tragic thing. The arrogance of mind is that I can take care of myself. How foolish. I don't care how big nor how small we are. There isn't one big enough to take care of himself. We need the help of God. There's not one that has the mental capacity to do it. He's got to have the mind of Christ. And he desperately needs it. In 1 Timothy 6, we will see another manifestation of the carnal mind. We have seen it for so many years since the apostasy. 1 Timothy 6, and beginning in verse 3. If any man teach otherwise, obviously they were, or the Apostle Paul would not have had to write about it. If any man teach otherwise and consent not to wholesome words, even the words of our Lord Jesus Christ, and to the doctrine which is according to holiness or godliness, he is proud, knowing nothing. Now, some of you feel that sometimes I'm very strong with my words. Well, I haven't said yet that I know of that you're brainless. That's what Paul said here under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit. Knowing nothing, but doting about questions. In other words, the word doting comes from the word meaning soft-headed, muddled and confused. Doting about questions and strifes of words, whereof cometh envy, strife, railings, and evil surmisings. Perverse disputings of men of corrupt minds. What a tragedy. One of the terrible, terrible consequences of having given up the physical mind initially and receiving the mind of Christ and then losing faith is perversion. Perverse disputings of men, religious argumentations, worthless, of corrupt minds. The world today, because of the apostasy, is saturated with perverse minds and destitute, swept out, clean, totally lacking, destitute of the truth, supposing, that is, in this arrogant conception of its own natural greatness, supposing that gain is godliness. They got this person or that person, or they achieved this or they achieved that, or they have this kind of an income or that kind of an income, whatever gain it is. Supposing that gain is godliness, from such withdraw thyself. One of the chief characteristics then is a perversion of mind, separating from the peace and the tranquility of the Spirit of God. And God said, if such chattering, doting, or arrogance manifests itself, have nothing to do with it. I didn't say it. God did. All right, next. What are the manifestations now of the mind of the Spirit? This is the mind that I want. Isaiah 26:3. Let's read it rather quickly here. Isaiah 26, and noting verse 3. Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace. What a marvelous promise. Thou wilt keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on thee. No chance of the carnal mind being in that posture, because he trusts in God. What then is one of the living manifestations? One who exists in peace. That is, the mind is not absolutely whipping that individual like a flag in the breeze. Stable. Happy. Contented. Luke 12 and verse 29. We're going right back to this text one more time. Luke 12 and note verse 29. Seek not you what you shall eat or what you shall drink, neither be you of doubtful mind. In other words, in this case now, it's the opposite of one who doubts, who is troubled and perplexed. Here now is an element of confidence and humble assurance. I'm not talking about arrogance. I'm talking about humility, but humble assurance, confidence. In 2 Timothy 1 and verse 7, we were to be endued with the spirit of love and of power and of a sound mind. It isn't a scrambled mind. It is not a matter of confusion and bewilderment. It's a matter of stable orientation. Feet planted on terra firma in total confidence and conviction. In Titus 3 and verse 1, it is a mind that is responsive to order. The order of God in this earth, including authority. Do we exist in the climate of responsiveness? Children toward parents, a stable home, wives toward husbands, husbands toward those for whom they work, the community with regard to government. Doesn't mean you necessarily agree with it, but we're not agitated in fighting it. Yes, a spiritual mind then, the manifestation of that mind, is in the acceptance of responsibility. It's responsive to government, to authority, to responsibility. Think about it, brethren. We've had various ones assigned to responsibilities within the body. Immediately, I think of the one who has been a deaconess for many years, who has served us so marvelously. Have we always been unusually responsive to her, Mrs. Leona Bean? Or have we agitated? Have we taken exception with her? You see, it is for that very reason, brethren, as I told people on the last trip, when I was called in to counsel on a particular situation, and I said, I want you to understand one thing right now. I am not the ultimate authority in this situation. There was a father sitting there. I said, it's his word that stands, not mine. You know how many problems would have been eliminated in worldwide if they had just recognized proper administration? I think and I hope that every one of you recognizes that I am not out ruling your lives. Your families are your families. Those responsibilities are yours. If a husband says, a father says, you shall not do so and so, that's where it stands. Regardless of what I say. For a father, a husband has that authority. And I cannot possibly usurp that and be right in the sight of God. And yet the idea was that we were not the espousers of truth, but the usurpers of all responsibility. We don't have dominion over your faith. Remember? You do. But I'll tell you, people don't want to assume that because they're still demanding that we make the decisions. Of course, that means I want you to make the decision I want you to make. The arrogance of human mind, remember? Now, they don't mean for us to make the decision in contrary to what they want. If we're doing the right thing, we'll make the decision that they want made. Of course. We all know what perfection is. Ask each individual. Responsiveness then to authority, as God gave it. I cannot usurp, must not usurp, the authority of a husband or a father. I haven't been given that responsibility. But then what about the responsibility that's been given to us? Have any attempted to plague us in that regard? Hebrews 8 and verse 10. The natural response to God's ways, laws, and statutes. Remember, he said that they were going to be written in your minds and in your hearts. That means that you're automatically going to respond to these things. So what is then one of the manifestations of the Spirit of God, or the mind of Christ, of the Spirit? We respond to those things in a spiritual manner. You will note it also in Hebrews 10 and verse 16. In 1 Peter 4, verses 1 through 3, is the telltale one. How do we respond to trials, to difficulties, to tests? Do we count it all a joy, or do we bellyache and complain about them? When we experience a trial, a difficulty, something that forces us to get on our knees, the only means that God has of teaching us, he allows them. And do we turn around and say, thank you, God, and I don't want any of those things removed until I learn my lessons? Or do we complain? The mind of the Spirit does not complain, it accepts. It is responsive to trials, to experiences, and to tests. And then the fifth point is, what is then the value of a spiritual mind? But I'm going to have to give that to you next time.
The Church of God the Eternal has just presented What is the Natural Body? This was the number 26 tape in the series, and it was given by Mr. Raymond Cole.